Blog Talk Radio.
Memorial for Ib Melchior, novelist, short story writer, film producer, film director, and screenwriter. Hello, is that
hello,
Cameron?
Hello. Yep, yes. I'm here.
Is Cameron Scott, running a switchboard, filmmaker, cameraman, director, and...
You name it, I do.
And
we should have Ed with us.
And yeah, this is Edward X. Young. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Mild
yeah,
and clear.
Yeah.
We have Grindhouse superstars running the show tonight. We have John Link, who is the ultimate Grindhouse superstar actor.
Yeah, that's true.
We have Cameron Scott, who's a great filmmaker, directed and photographed and edited and wrote Postmortem America 2021, a proper introduction for you, Cameron. He shot and edited... shot and edited our movie, Two Guys, One Box, starring me and John Link. And he's working on the Crocodile Chronicles next with a juicy part for me. And we'll have to get together and discuss this in private later. But I, Edward X. Young, for the past 10 years, am a veteran of over 65 independent horror and science fiction movies. And the reason why we're all in this business is because of the way we were warped as children by these incredibly weird drive-in movies that we saw as kids. And I particularly was moved by the late Ib Yergin Melchior, who was just an incredible author and filmmaker, and had a unique talent. Most of his movies were made for American International Pictures, but not all. He frequently worked with Sidney Pink. But what I liked about Ib Melchior, and I'll let you other gentlemen talk about him, and I think we have some other guests calling in, too. So be sure to open
I'm
that.
I'm keeping an eye on that.
And so I think Michael Shard is a huge Melchior fan is going to call. But I admire the fact that, you know, Ib Melchior worked with very, very tiny budgets, almost no money whatsoever, and just with sheer imagination produced these incredibly entertaining movies, often with just wild art direction and art design, made from like a hodgepodge of like junk. I was watching Journey to the Seventh Planet just last night with Chris Ellenstein at his house. We were watching some Melchior movies to prepare for this. And just the astronauts' spacesuits, they were wearing motorcycle helmets. And they had scuba gear on and put just some plexiglass, like a plexiglass square in front of the motorcycle helmets with an antenna. It was brilliant. I mean, the creature on the seventh planet, Uranus, it was about a journey to Uranus, the ultimate monster was a piece of tripe with an eyeball in the middle, with a glass eye in the middle of it. And I loved it. It was wonderful. But his movies were enormously fun. And, I'll say more, but it is John Link's show. I think John knows a lot about Ib Melchior. And John Link had the pleasure of meeting Ib's erstwhile partner, Sidney Pink, when he was alive. And we lost Ib Melchior. We lost Ib Melchior, sadly, just before the Ides of March, March 14th, Saturday, March 14th, 2015. He was 97 years old and still going strong up until the very end, from what I heard. And I was at the Monster Mania convention in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, when I heard when that news broke. But, John Link, what do you have to say about Ib Melchior?
Well, he wrote two movies I'm a big fan of, Angry Red Planet and Reptilicus. I'm a big fan of Reptilicus.
I hate to interject, but the official title of this program is, the name of this tonight's program is, Ib Melchior Created the Fat Rat Spider.
Yeah.
We do have another caller. I'm going to bring them in here real quick, not to interrupt you fellas, but this is area code 304. You're live.
Hey, how are you this evening? Is this Cameron? This is Billy Jack Watkins here. How's it going?
Oh, okay.
John, how are you doing?
Okay.
Billy Jack Watkins is calling from West Virginia.
That's correct.
We have been friends for, my God, 31 years ago I met Billy Jack Watkins when we were working for a dreadfully evil company in New Jersey. And it was despoiling and polluting the environment, creating mutant monsters in central New Jersey. But I used to enjoy my evenings after work at Billy J. Watkins' house watching wonderfully cheap movies like this. I bet you got a lot to say about Ib Melchior's movies, Mr. Watkins.
Yeah, I tell you, I just showed my friend a clip of the rat bat monster here, and my friend Aziza, and I tell you, that thing, I don't know, it gets worse looking as time goes on. I thought it was pretty bad when I was a kid, but now it looks even worse. I just watched it on YouTube, and I'm like, oh my God, how do you jam a ray gun? I want to know how you do that. But they actually managed to jam the ray gun before they were able to successfully blind this poor rat bat spider thing as it tried futilely to get the man out in between the two boulders with its claw. It was What a movie, I tell you. But, you know, it's true what they said about him, that he managed to make low-budget movies into very memorable movies. I mean, I never forgot that movie as long as I lived. You know, really, really memorable movie and very entertaining. Everybody always talked about the bat, rat, spider.
Remember, it was filmed in the process known as Cinemagic, which meant that they sort of like when the spaceship lands on Mars and the astronauts step outside, they're in like sort of like a quasi double negative, and everything's just red.
Yeah. Well, it's the angry red planet. It has to be red.
but you know who was credited with inventing the Cinemagic process, which is used in the movie? Norman Maurer, who is Mo Howard's was nephew or his son-in-law. Really?
Norman Maurer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Norman Maurer and
that.
His wife also did these comics in the early 50s with what's his name again? The guy who did Tor.
Tor. The caveman, you mean?
Yeah, the caveman, yeah.
I used to buy those comics back in the 60s. I'm forgetting who did Tor, who the artist was. I used to read Tor.
Oh,
I don't remember now, to be honest with you.
Famous artist. He died a few years ago.
Didn't Tor have, like, a pet triceratops?
No.
He had a pet dinosaur of some sort, though, didn't he? It might not have been
a
triceratops, but I remember.
A small mammal called Chi-Chi.
Thought he had a triceratops, man.
That's what I thought. I thought I knew it was like a dinosaur of some sort.
Yeah.
But the Angry Red Planet, don't forget, there were other monsters in this movie, too. I mean, there was that wonderful giant jellyfish monster with the rotating eye. That ingests and dissolves the comic relief astronaut who kind of looked like Speedy Gonzales, like a human version of Speedy Gonzales.
Right, that was supposed to be a giant amoeba, which as a kid, since I was so interested in microbiology, I found that kind of fascinating, that this gigantic amoeba was actually managing to somehow partially digest this ship. I thought that was pretty amazing. And then, of course, the threatening giant killer plant, right, that grabs the helpless female, starts to try to devour the female.
I wonder whatever happened to her. The very beautiful, red-haired, green-eyed Nora Hayden. And I don't know why
she died a few years ago.
Why didn't
and
she
I met her at a convention.
Really?
Yeah.
Where? A chiller convention?
Probably, yeah.
How did I miss this one? I would love to have met her. I wonder why she wasn't a bigger star, because she was absolutely drop-dead gorgeous.
Yeah.
She was indeed. Yes, she was. I agree with that. She was.
She reminded me a lot of Patricia Blair, you know, from the Rifleman and Daniel Boone, you know.
Mm.
But, yeah, and then also Les Tremaine was in The Angry Red Planet.
Mm-hmm.
Dies from like sort of like the bends when they are exiting the planet, when they're flying to Earth. They accelerate too fast and he starts hemorrhaging.
Now, I wanted to just interject something here because I Googled Tor comic and it says here, are you talking about Kubert and inker Carmine Infantino?
Yes,
I believe they were the ones that did it. Is that the ones you're talking about, John?
You are correct.
It was Kubert, but I don't remember Carmen Infantino having anything to do with it.
He inked it. He inked the comic. He was the inker. Yeah, he was the inker for it. And I remember him. He was a good inker. Some of them had lousy inkers, and it didn't look, you know, some of the comics weren't so great. But, yeah.
I love the old days when these comics were handmade, and you had the pencilers and the inkers and the colorists and the letterers.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, now, the Tor comics are available in a 3-volume reprint edition.
Neat.
Well, you pick one up.
Oh, I did. I did a few years ago, yeah.
But John Link, what do you know about one of Ibn Melchior's more famous movies, Reptilicus, that he made with Sidney?
Oh, I remember that one. A big fan of Reptilicus. Now,
that was actually
happened,
the first of his movies I ever saw.
The
what
dragon
happened
that
with
ate,
Reptilicus?
Dragon that ate
Sid,
Copenhagen, Denmark.
Yeah. Sid Pink.
Right.
Described Reptilicus as his most profitable movie and his biggest embarrassment. Now, what went wrong with Reptilicus? They had this beautifully sculpted monster, but as Sid Pink didn't know how to make it move, and that's what ruined the movie.
You know, it still is an interesting puppet. Yeah, they didn't use it properly, but what I think was interesting is that in the scene, well, first of all, they had Reptilicus, I think, in the American version, actually spit venom.
Yeah, and Sid Pink hated that. That
but
was one of the...
But the way, they did the, venom, the way they did the venom was the same way they did the ray guns in Journey to the Seventh Planet. They simply scratched the negative.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't, that was the process. Just scratched
yeah.
the negative.
You mean they just destroyed the film negative to achieve the effect? That seemed like
they scratched away to like with the ray guns in Journey to the Seventh Planet. That you could tell they just took like a pin and just scratched these rays up to the negative. But also, when Reptilicus the dragon eats a human or a couple of the humans, it's very clear that the humans that the dragon is eating are just paper cutouts. They're paper cutouts.
Yeah.
But you know.
Yeah, but there is one scene in Reptilicus that went good. It looked animated. That one scene where they used the flamethrower on him.
But my point is, it's all good because as to the uninitiated, to the. The people who don't understand us purveyors of bad cinema, in a certain sense, it had a surreal... His movies have a surreal beauty in that they're so bad and awful. They achieve high art. You have to admire what they do, what Ibn Melchior would do with like nothing but a fistful of change to make these pictures. And yet I still maintain that his sci-fi movies are far more entertaining and enjoyable than the turgid, bloated, big-budget crap that Hollywood is putting out today. I would rather watch an Ibn Melchior movie any day than watch, you know, Will Smith's garbage like I Am Legend or I, Robot or After Earth. I mean, those turgid pieces of shit.
Well, Vincent Price's version of that was 10 times better, in my opinion. I love his version. Last Man on Earth.
Yeah.
Last Man on Earth. I thought that was much better.
Even the Omega Man, which was, you know, came much later with Charlton Heston, was 100 times better as well.
Right, right.
I think what's very interesting about Ibn Melchior, too, is that, you know, he wasn't just a filmmaker. I mean, a biography was written about him called Man of Imagination, about his films. But he wrote his own autobiography. His own autobiography was an Army counterintelligence agent in World War II. He was a military intelligence officer in World War II, and I believe he helped liberate one of the notorious concentration camps. Which one was it? I'm trying to find which one. But also, he killed a lot of Nazis. And even though he was Danish...
So he was multi-talented then.
But even though he was Danish, I think Sweden, the government of Sweden, knighted him for his courage and his courage and achievements in World War II to help defeat the fascists.
Wow, that's really interesting. And you know, it's funny because I was just talking to my brother last night about my Uncle Arthur, who was in the Army Air Corps in World War II, and he was a very intelligent man, and they actually sent him in to help the Danish underground. Of course, they were occupied by the Germans in World War II, and they sent him there to set up communication equipment secretly. And he told some fantastic stories about the Danes and how they fought against the Nazis. He said what they would do is they would wait until dusk, and they would come down the slopes, and they were entirely painted white. Their guns, every bit of their guns, their boots, their skis, their clothes, there was not one shred of any other color. And they'd come down the slopes at dusk, and they'd just shoot as many Nazis as they could and take off again. But my uncle was over there and told some incredible stories about that, so I was thinking about that. Now do you say this man was, you know, knighted by the Swedes? My uncle was over there doing communication work. Pretty fantastic.
Mm-hmm. You know, to get back to Sid Pink and Reptilicus.
Right, I was watching clips of it. Yep.
Yeah, to get back to Sid Pink and Reptilicus. The Danish version of the movie had scenes with Reptilicus flying, and they were all cut out of the American version. And Sid Pink hated the changes they made, and he was Sid Pink and Ed Melchior hated each other's guts for the rest of their lives.
Wow.
Because of that. Sid Pink hated the effect with the venom. And now, Sam Arkoff, the head of
American International Pictures.
American
right.
International, yeah. He licensed Charlton Comics to make this comic book, Reptilicus comic book series, and
right.
Sid Pink sued or threatened to sue him, and also Arkoff licensed this paperback company to make this sexy novel of Reptilicus, which Sid Pink hated.
Oh my goodness!
And because of the Sid Pink at the convention said about Arco, Sam is Sam. I don't hate him. I just don't like him like that. Now,
Well, I was going to say about you know, I'll let you run with this one, John. I mean, I'm hoping our film director friend and actor Michael Chartier calls in because he's a huge fan. His favorite. I mean, he said he was going to call tonight. Maybe he forgot, but he's a huge fan of Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
Oh,
I am too. I love that movie.
I must have seen, but
adored.
I don't remember
it.
Some critics actually say that's Melchior's best movie, and but you know Melchior, a lot of people don't know this. Melchior wrote and made Robinson Crusoe on Mars, which is probably the best thing that Adam West ever did outside of the Batman TV series. But Melchior had another treatment which was rejected by the studios. Rejected by Irwin Allen, a treatment called Space Family Robinson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Irwin Allen rejected it, said it wouldn't fly, and then Irwin Allen goes out and creates Lost in Space, and it's the Robinson family.
Yeah.
And Melchior sued, but I think he got very little money because Irwin Allen had the backing of the major studios behind him, and then Melchior was just this low-budget AIP filmmaker. He later took his story, Space Family Robinson, and turned it into a Gold Key comic.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. And I also remember Reptilicus comic, believe it or not. I do remember those.
The Reptilicus comic lasted two issues. Because of because of Sid Pink threatening to sue, or Charlton changed it to Reptosaurus the Terrible.
Now, you've been in a few comic books, too, haven't you, John? Like, comic books made
Playmate of the Apes, and what was the other one? Forget which one the other one was.
The Lord of the G-Strings.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, they made a comic of that?
I wish they would do Gladiator Ironicus, because I had a bigger part in that.
John Link's image, and referring to him as John Link, is right there in the Playmate of the Apes comic book, the graphic novel.
I played the missing link. I forget if they put my name in it.
Yes, they did. A special credit in the movie. Solo screen credit, which says, and also featuring John Link as the missing link.
The eighth god, the missing link. Now, to get back to Sid Pink. Sid Pink wrote a screenplay for a sequel to Reptilicus. Now, you remember the foot of Reptilicus got blown off in the depth bombing. And in Sid Pink's screenplay, it was 200 years later, the foot had grown into a full-size Reptilicus, and he helps to defeat an invasion from outer space. Now, what I heard, Sid Pink sent a copy to Sam Sherman, and if I remember correctly, somebody else, and I questioned Sid Pink, and they were going to, after Sid Pink, no, I questioned Sam Sherman years ago, and he said they were going to do this as a favor to Sid, but after Sid died, they were going to do it in CGI, which is a good. I would have liked that as long as they make the CGI look exactly like the Reptilicus model. Now, the Reptilicus model, I questioned Sid about it, and he said it's totally gone. He didn't have the brains to save it. He wished he had. And this was so beautifully sculpted. Now, I questioned Sid Pink about the resemblance of Reptilicus to the Flubberdub character on Howdy Doody, and he said the Danish sculptor had never seen Howdy Doody, so he couldn't have possibly have got the inspiration from that.
And one of the many times I've talked to George Romero, he adamantly denies ever having seen or been inspired by Herc Harvey's 1962 Carnival of Souls. Even though it seems almost impossible that he wasn't inspired by it. He'll acknowledge the story was inspired by Night of the Living Dead, was inspired directly by Richard Matheson's novel I Am Legend, but he won't give any credit to even knowing who Herc Harvey is. I mean, he actually told me when we were talking in 2005 that he'd never heard of the movie Carnival of Souls, but didn't know what I was talking about.
Yeah.
He really had seen the picture. I don't believe that. I don't.
I don't believe that Reptilicus wasn't inspired by the Flubberdub. It's too much similarity there.
I would actually agree with you, John.
Yeah.
But you know, CGI would have sucked because the beauty of Reptilicus was it was this wild ass puppet. I mean, maybe there was some fakeness to it, but Reptilicus was the Danish Godzilla. That's what it was.
And Sid Pink said, how come it was done in Denmark? He said, because he just liked Denmark. And I believe Ib Melchior's Danish Contact had something to do with doing it there.
Well, Ib Melchior was born in Copenhagen. He was born in Copenhagen in 1917. Mm-hmm. That's where he's from originally, yeah.
Yeah, now, let's see, what else was I going to say?
I was noticing that it actually had a different director for the Danish version, which, you know, you were talking about how different the Danish version was. His name was Paul Bang.
Yeah. Now, I wish I had a copy of the Danish version. Who has it?
Chris Ellenstein has a copy of the American version. We were going to watch that at his house yesterday, too, but after watching The Angry Red Planet and Journey to the Seventh Planet, we figured, okay, two movies, that's enough. Another day we'll watch it. One should also note that Ib Melchior also wrote the English language script for Mario Bava's Planet of the Vampires, which was certainly a forerunner of Alien. Especially, there's a lot of Alien in that, and a really scary, effective movie. And he also did The Time Travelers, 1964, and for television, he wrote the wonderful episode for the second season of The Outer Limits, Joe Stefano's show. He wrote The Premonition, which was known as one of the better episodes of The Outer Limits, too. And let us not forget, he had a short story called The Racer, which was adopted by Paul Bartel into Death Race 2000.
Cool. Yeah, I remember The Premonition. I do remember that. Yep.
Now, to get back to Sid Pink, he was sick from smoking, and he said, kids, please don't smoke. He wishes he hadn't, and one of his legs got amputated, and he died shortly after. And I spoke to Sam Sherman, and he said they were going to do a Reptilicus 2 as a favor for Sid, but after he died, they said they put it on the back burner, which means it'll never be made. Now, I asked him about Sid's script, and he said it was on his hard drive, and he never printed it out. Now, I wish I could get a copy of Sid's script.
Well, you never met Ib Melchior, did you, John?
Never did, no.
He was doing conventions, but I'm not sure if he was doing East Coast conventions. I think he was only doing them out in California.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Watkins, what do you remember about the Premonition episode of Lost of the Outer Limits?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm trying to remember now. One second. Oh, boy. And I'll even bring it up here to jog my memory a little bit. But, okay. Premonition, Outer Limits. That, I'm trying to remember who starred in that. Do you remember who were the stars in it?
I don't remember which episode it was, but I've seen them all.
Oh, I've seen them all many times. They were on one of the local stations down here in North Carolina. Jim Darcy was in it, Linda Darcy, William Bramley. I'm sorry, Dewey Martin, rather. I got it backwards.
Well, what was
Dewey
the
Martin.
Plot? What was the plot?
Well, the plot was Jim Darcy, the pilot of an X-15 rocket-powered research aircraft, and his wife Linda become trapped 10 seconds ahead of their time. That's the one where the ship was actually, like, frozen. Okay, enabling them to watch time unfold to catch up with them at the rate of about 1 second every 30 minutes. Yeah, that's when they had to synchronize back to normal time. And then they were watching their little baby daughter who was going to be hit by a military truck because the parking brake wasn't set properly. Now I remember that one.
What was the monster in the episode? Because Joe Stefano, who created The Outer Limits, who was the screenwriter of Psycho, always had a bear, as he called it, in the episode. That's how they were different from Twilight Zone. Outer Limits always had a monster. I forget, what was the monster in The Premonition?
Well, actually, I don't remember really a monster in that one, but they mention here that they meet an unnamed and seemingly malevolent individual who was played by Kay Cooter, or Cutter, I guess, and they called it the Limbo Being, who earlier experienced the same situation, but he failed to make it back in time. When it reveals that it could take from their chances to return to reality, they came to find out how grave their situation was, and they could be stuck in limbo forever if they didn't, you know, synchronize the events properly. I remember that one now because he tries to save his daughter's little young daughter from being run over by that truck. And if you remember, he runs back and he takes the seat belts out of his wife's car and he ties them to the back wheel of the truck. And he ties the other end around the brakes so that the truck's brakes will engage the minute the time warp ends. So they were able to save the daughter. But, yeah, I remember it well now. In fact, I think I saw that about maybe a year ago.
I remember the Limbo Man. I remember that. It was scary, too, you know. And then I thought about Limbo. With the
right.
Babies. Well, I thought because, you know, they told us in Catholic school it's where babies go when they're not baptized and they die.
There you go. Yep, absolutely.
And it's kind of like John Link's basement.
Yeah, well.
That was directed by Gerd Oswald.
Now, to get back to Reptilicus, Charlton did a magazine called Mad Monsters, and it did a coverage of Reptilicus in an early issue, saying that the evil creature from a time long dead, and the article was so good, and Sid Pink said that Reptilicus isn't evil, he's just out of his time.
There you go.
Now,
and there was also
Reptilicus, the first movie was created from a chunk. They found a chunk and it grew into Reptilicus, right?
It's a tail,
Right, right.
Frozen in the permafrost.
Right.
Melcher had a wild ass imagination, you know. And I thought,
sort of like the Thing, though. If you remember the Thing, it was played by James Arness, the original Thing, where it was up by the North Pole. That was a similar thing. As soon as they started to defrost it, it grew and reanimated or animated, whatever you want to call it.
Who Goes There was the original.
Exactly.
The original novel, which was
It
was condensed. It had a condensed version in the early Famous Monsters.
Right, I read it many times. I believe it was written by Joseph Campbell, if I remember right.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You're right, Bill.
Yeah.
Bill Watkins is right again.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say that, but Melcher's imagination, like, how did he ever think up a story? I mean, like a bunch of astronauts in Journey to the Seventh Planet. They're traveling to explore Uranus. Bunch of guys are in a spaceship, and they're going to take a trip to Uranus and plant the flag right in the middle of Uranus.
Isn't that where you're supposed to plant flags, though, in Uranus?
Why don't you go plant a flag right in the middle of your brother's anus?
Oh, I'd love to. There was a Monster Card set that included Reptilicus.
I need to ask about Ib Melcher's obsessions. In The Angry Red Planet, he has this wonderful monster, the Bat-Rat Spider, his most famous monster, which is just pieced together. It's obvious he's taken some spider puppet and taken some rubber rat and stuck it on top of it and like slapped this monster together. But then the astronauts shoot the Bat-Rat Spider with their sonic ray ray guns because they couldn't afford special effects and have actually beams shoot out. He hadn't thought about scratching the negative until he did Journey to the Seventh Planet 5 years later. But they had sonic guns that just emitted sound. But here's the bat rat spider, this big rodent, and they blind the poor little bastard. They shoot him in the eyes, blind him, and then 5 years later, in Journey to the Seventh Planet, the astronauts are harassed by this big rat cyclops. And don't kill the rat cyclops. They stab him in the eye with a spear, and they blind him. I mean, here's the thing about blinded rats. And also, I want to know, it was a great bit of stop-motion animation. It was highly unexpected in Journey to the Seventh Planet with John Agar. Was that a young Jim Danforth doing the animation for that?
I'd have to look it up.
Because it looks like his style, and I didn't.
No,
that's
Journey to the Seventh Planet you're talking about.
Yeah, where they travel to Uranus.
Okay, I'll Google it real quick.
But when they travel to Uranus, what's interesting in Uranus is even though they were expecting a frozen wasteland, but this brain creature. Which is made of a piece of tripe with a glass eye in the middle of it, is able to control their environment. Is able to change matter. So and can read their minds. So when they it's a very imaginative sci-fi movie. When they land a rocket ship in the middle of Uranus, the brain creature made of tripe reads their minds and creates an environment like Earth, populated by beautiful, seductive women. It's a very freaky, weird movie. I really love, and then it has this groovy song at the end of it. And again, Norman Maurer produced it, I believe, and also used his Cinemagic process, which was blue in this case, as opposed to being red in The Angry Red Planet. Go figure.
One of my favorite starlets was in that too, by the way, Greta Thyssen. She was she was a beautiful woman. Greta Thyssen was in that movie, you know.
That's right.
And she used later on. She was in a few of the Stooges shorts also, and she actually doubled for Marilyn Monroe in some different films, but I don't remember which ones. But she had an incredible shape. Greta Thyssen, you remember her?
She was also
Miss Norway, I believe. Yes.
Was she in Stooge episodes with Joe Besser?
I believe so. Yes. Yes, it was. It was Joe Besser because it was the one where they were supposedly adopted, and he was going to try to bump them off, and she was trying to bump them off using a baseball bat. In the one short, anyway, she was in a couple with them. One was just I don't remember the other one, but I think she was actually in two Stooges shorts. Mm-hmm. But she had an incredible figure, Greta Thyssen, and I believe she was Miss Norway.
Interesting thing about watching Journey to the Seventh Planet, which made it more dreamy and weird, you can tell in watching it that the whole movie was shot MOS without sound, and everything was dubbed in later. And John Agar, you could tell, is because I recognize his voice, he is dubbing his own voice, but I think all the other actors and actresses were not the actual performers. So as a result, there is absolutely zero natural sound in Journey to the Seventh Planet. And it makes it, at his best, Mel Torme's movies were like really freaky acid trip movies. They were a lot of fun to watch if you were smoking weed. I mean, I know a lot of potheads just love Angry Red Planet. I think there was a punk rock band which used the symbol of the bat rat spider as their logo.
Now, when Sid Pink was doing the convention, there were two models grossly overpriced they were selling.
We have only a minute left of the show, John. A minute left.
Yeah.
Better sum it up.
Reptilicus for $50 and the bat rat spider for $60. I wish I had gotten the bat rat spider, but it was so expensive. Now, Nora Hayden was supposed to be in Reptilicus, but when she heard that she wasn't going to be the star, she butted out.
a mighty beautiful woman.
Yeah.
Cameron Scott, we've hardly allowed you to talk at all. My apologies.